Maybe I'll read another poem about the academic world. I'm going to start. Would anybody mind if I take my coat off? It's much hotter at this end of the room than at that end. Thank you. Well, all right. If I promise to sort of stop at that, is that all right? I'm known as the middle class man's Allen Ginsberg. I take off my suit coat. This is a poem about the time when I was a graduate student at the State University of Iowa in Iowa City. And I had just been there forever. I was there so long that they said I was the only graduate student with tenure. This poem is about the year that my tenure ran out. You know, they finally came to me. I'd been there for years and years, doing what graduate students do. You know, how everybody else on January 1st makes long lists of resolutions and how they will stop being mean to their wife and they will get to work on and that lasts for a day or so. Well, graduate students do it on September 1st. And you make a long list of books you will read that year, languages you will learn that year, all those pious things, and that lasts for a day or so. Then you get busy doing something else, and all of a sudden the year's gone by. Then you feel very guilty because you haven't read any of those books. And so the next year you make a longer list. And I'd done this for about 10 years at Iowa, and so that I really was one of the very finest list makers that they had there. However, I hadn't read any books. They came around and said, look, Snodgrass, it isn't that we don't like having you here, but if you're going to stay this year, take the examination. So I packed. I mean, in 10 years, I had learned one thing. I wasn't ready for that examination. Now wait, that's no small thing to have learned. I mean, a lot of my friends... I wasn't psychotic. I was only neurotic. I knew I hadn't read the books. A lot of my friends went totally out of their skull and went and took the examination. I mean, and were surprised that they hadn't read any more books than I had, but somehow they felt they were... No, I knew I wasn't. I knew that if they were going to act that way, I just had to leave. Well, before leaving, I sort of had to take a sort of personal inventory of myself and my own qualities to try to avoid, to find out where in the world to go from there, and also to try to avoid making such failures as I had in, at least in some sense, made there. In some ways, it was, a terribly valuable time to me, but I sort of hated to leave without having done the things I at least said I was going to do, even if I should have known I wasn't going to do them. I didn't want to make that kind of goof up again, and so wanted to know what qualities I had that were some good, and what were the rest of my qualities that I had to guard against? This is called April Inventory. And I guess before reading it, I ought to say that it says some absolutely terrible things about scholars. I don't mean them. I only felt them. I mean, it isn't the same thing at all, but it's the kind of thing you have to face when you're writing. You've got to... you feel all kinds of things that you don't approve of for a minute, and you got to put them in the poem, or else it means you cleaned up, the picture of yourself, and you tried to clean up the world and make a tidier, neater, more flattering one than the one that's there, and the poem all leaks away. You got to put all those ugly things, like envy. I mean, I was mighty envious. I mean, guys who could get doctorates, like Sam, could get jobs, and I couldn't get a job, and that made me mad. That doesn't mean there's something wrong with scholars. It may very well mean there's something wrong with me. Even worse than that, I was very mad at them because they could be scholars, and I couldn't. I'd have done anything to be a scholar, except read those books. So I was mad at them, what I'm trying to say, really, I guess, is, I some of my best friends are scholars. April Inventory. The green catalpa tree has turned all white. The cherry blooms once more. In one whole year, I haven't learned a blessed thing they pay you for. The blossoms snow down in my hair. The trees and I will soon be bare. The trees have more than I to spare. The sleek, expensive girls I teach, younger and pinker every year, bloom gradually out of reach. The pear tree lets its petals drop like dandruff on a tabletop. The girls have grown so young by now, I have to nudge myself to stare. This year they smile and mind me how my teeth are falling with my hair. In 30 years I may not get younger, shrewder, or out of debt. The 10th time just a year ago, I made myself a little list of all the things I'd ought to know, then told my parents, analysts, and everyone who's trusted me I'd be substantial. Presently, I haven't read one book about a book, or memorized one plot, or found a mind I did not doubt. I learned one date, and then forgot. And one by one, the solid scholars get the degrees, the jobs, the dollars, and smile above their starchy collars. I taught my classes Whitehead's notions, one lovely girl a song of Mahler's. Lacking a source book or promotions, I showed one child the colors of a Luna moth and how to love. I taught myself to name my name, to bark back, loosen love and crying, to ease my woman. So she came to ease an old man who was dying. I have not learned how often I can win, can love, but choose to die. I have not learned there is a lie. Love shall be blonder, slimmer, younger. That my equivocating eye loves only by my body's hunger. That I have forces true to feel. Or that the lovely world is real. While scholars speak authority and wear their ulcers on their sleeves, my eyes in spectacles shall see these trees procure and spend their leaves. There is a value underneath the gold and silver in my teeth. Though trees turn bare and girls turn wives, we shall afford our costly seasons. There is a gentleness survives that will outspeak and has its reasons. There is a loveliness exists, preserves us, not for specialists.